Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Here's a useful stat courtesy of your federal government. Small businesses provide 55% of all jobs in this country, more than half. And since the 1970s, small businesses have provided two-thirds of all new net jobs. Two-thirds. So you get the idea that small businesses are a big engine in this economy. Every time experts talk about our economy, they talk about the need to create an environment to make small businesses thrive. Today we look at starting and sustaining a small business in the Kansas City area and how they're faring in general. With us today are several entrepreneurs, and I'll introduce them one at a time as we go through our show today. But first, I want to bring on Jeff Hornsby. He's the Henry Block Missouri Endowed Chair of Entrepreneurship and the Interim Director of the Rainier Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. And Jeff, nice to have you.
Good to be here.
And that's a mouthful, too.
It's a lot, yeah.
It's a lot. Well, kick things off for us, Jeff. How do you define a small business? What is it?
Well, it can be defined in a number of ways, but lots of times we go with employee size or revenue size.
Sure.
And the federal government uses any business less than 500 employees is considered to be small.
Well, but 450 employees strikes me as a pretty big business.
Yes. When you get to small, we call it, it's 50 or under.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a lot of people look at is a small business.
And so a small business becomes a big business when you cross 500 or whatever?
When you start, in our perception, it's when you have to start hiring people to help you manage your workforce. So when you reach 50 employees, you have to start looking at doing things like bringing on other managers, someone to manage your marketing, someone to manage your human resources sometimes, and finance and those types of things.
You know, Jeff, what percentage of small businesses end up surviving, you know, their first year, the first 5 years? Do you have numbers connected with all that?
Yeah. In terms of it really varies by area. So in terms of businesses that succeed – after the first 5 years, it's generally very high. Once you get – that's a good watermark for success rates. And so and industries such as finance-based businesses, agriculture-based businesses, education and health, generally those after 5 years have a very big success rate. Interesting, restaurants and service-related businesses like that, their success rate doesn't go up. It's always a fight to survive.
So of all the small businesses that start in the country, what percentage of them actually make it to 5 years, just roughly?
About 50%.
50%?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not too bad.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, getting past the first year is the hardest. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Most startups are undercapitalized, so they don't have enough money to see it through over the startup period. They are out of their zone of management expertise or technology expertise, and so they tend to manage themselves into the ground.
You know, a shortfall of capital, is that the main reason that most small businesses wind up collapsing?
In the first year, yes. Mm-hmm. And the other part of it is they grow too fast and they manage too little.
Meaning what?
They expand, they hire a lot of people, they try to take on a lot of sales, and it's the old overpromise and underdeliver process.
Huh. Well, I want to ask each of our business owners who are with me here in the studio this morning to tell us the basics of their company. When did you start, and what is your product? And let's start with Donna Yadrich. She's founder of Audrey Spirit. Donna, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
What is Audrey Spirit?
It is the legacy of my daughter, Audrey Grace, who was seriously ill her whole life, but overcame tons of challenges, and she passed away at the age of 15 at Children's Mercy. So I'm trying to honor her legacy, and our tagline is how the impossible gets done, because even though she was a very sick kid, she did lots of amazing things, like was on a competitive dance team and tumble team and got straight A's. And so I'm just trying to build a company worthy of her legacy.
And so Audrey Spirit does what? What does the company do?
We are technically a manufacturer of garments, that look like streetwear that are used in medical environments.
So that nurses and doctors can insert tubes and do what they have to do, and people can still feel comfortable in their own clothing.
They look like themselves, and they only have to reveal a tiny piece of their anatomy for a therapy or an exam instead of having to lift up or open up everything.
Well, what a good idea. And I gather you got the idea just based on the experiences of your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a sort of a flash of light one day and think, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life?
Well, as when your child gets too sick that you can do anything about it, you're very limited in providing comfort measures because you can't really change things. But I could change her clothes, and I could make those easier for nurses to get in and out of things when she was in intensive care.
Mm-hmm.
It also kept her warm. Instead of having to take off a whole garment or open up a huge area, as a mom, that's all I could do is the little things. Keep her warm, keep her clean, and keep her as comfortable as possible.
So the company, Donna, has been around for how long now?
Well, technically, I started the company in April 2012. I filed for my federal tax ID number just because I wanted to mark my place in the world and say this is when the business started. But I was so blessed and was accepted into UMKC's Entrepreneurship Scholars Program. And so I was in that program for a year, and my business really changed a great deal in concept. I wanted to just sell shirts to families, and they taught me if I wanted to stay in business, and it was about staying in business so I could provide comfort to as many folks as I could, I had to have a scalable business. So I changed my market. My primary market now is hospitals.
Mm. Do you have other employees too?
I have volunteer servants, my sister, my mother. I have three sisters who are professionals.
Mm-hmm.
One's a financial professional, one's an operations person and insurance, and one is a communications specialist, and my mom and my son is my production manager.
Well, it sounds like you got all the right people to do what you need to do a company here.
Well, and I've got some amazing mentors in the faculty at UMKC and, the Kansas Small Business Development Center at Johnson County Community College. Elisa Waldman helps me a lot. My mentor, Michael Sanders, helps me a lot. This is an amazing place to have a business.
Well, that's Donna Yodrich, and she's the founder of Audrey Spirit. Let me move on to her left. Mike Farmer is the CEO of Leap It. Mike, welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
What's Leap It?
So Leap It is a search engine built here in Kansas, located at www.leap.it. And fundamentally, Leap.it says we have set out to reinvent search. And the way we've done
like what you do on Google.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've done first is we do away with blue links and we bring back visual search results.
Now, what does that mean, blue links? Explain that to me.
So when you think about Google, you type in a search and then you get text and then you get the link to a website. What we have done is we have built a system that will go out and in real time build an image of that website and pull it back so you can preview it before you click on it to go to it.
Huh.
So not only that, but we integrate with visual imagery as well as videos and then also social media. But the other thing algorithmically that we do, there's sort of four parts to what we're doing. The second part is our algorithms favor what is happening now. So we are leveraging sort of the conversation that's going on predominantly in sites like a Twitter. So when you search something, it's not just about the authority that largely Google and Bing and others have built, but we influence those results, those visual results, based on what's happening now.
Well, what made you think that you could start a company that would be a competitor to a giant like Google that everybody seems to be using?
You know, that's a great question, Steve. Interestingly, here in Kansas City, there was a group of us go back about 9 years ago who built a question and answer search engine. At that time, we made the decision. Keep in mind, this is 8 years ago. We made the decision to go after and build our engine to work with a voice library that was on a phone. So we went out to Sprint, and fundamentally, we built voice search, and this was 18 months before Google would come out with voice search.
Wow.
So a little bit of a been there, done that, and thought we could do it a second time. The second go-around, of course, we brought back the core team again. Actually, we were, interestingly, a year and a half ago featured on the front page of the New York Times about how we built this and have been building this, largely distributed guys working nights and weekends in making this happen. But it's, you know, it was at the first search company that I came across a website that Ray Kurzweil, who's a well-known scientist, one of the leading thinkers today, he had built a site called Kurzweil AI, the brain, where you could actually see object-based images whenever you'd search and be able to fundamentally do something with those objects, which actually is our sort of our third differentiator, and that is that we once we went to the visual nature of a site, which is in a card, we allow people to curate those search results. So just like you do on Pinterest, you can now all of a sudden create a website on, you know, what's the best barbecue in Kansas City and create all the images, the articles, the websites that support your...
And Leap It, Mike, has been around how long?
So Leap It's been around for 2.5 years.
Why you call it Leap It, why?
So we believe that you leap to the web, and then fundamentally, if you think about what goes on in social media, it's about you tweet it, you like it, now it's you leap it in the search world.
Huh. Why did you want to run your own company?
You know, I don't think entrepreneurs necessarily set out to say, I want to run my own company.
I think you're all laughing as he says that. Yeah.
You know, yeah. I think it's just the drive and the passion for something that really you can do something different. It's, you know, it's the curiosity of an idea, in this case, a new way to search that drives you, and then you find yourself running a company.
Oh, that's interesting. That's Mike Farmer of Leap It. And we're talking this morning with small business owners about the challenges of being an entrepreneur and trying to get an idea to market. Ryan Bennett joins us now. He's vice president and a founding member of a company called IdleSmart. From the company's website, IdleSmart automatically starts and stops an engine to reduce overnight idle time, provide year-round cab comfort, and it helps maintain fleet uptime. We're talking about big trucks here. Ryan, welcome. Good to have you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
How long have you been around?
Well, we've been around for about 2.5 years.
Yeah. Where did the idea for IdleSmart come from?
Yeah, so our two principals were looking to buy a business, looked at a bunch of different options, and came across this patent that a diesel technician made in the garage of his little shop out in a small town in Kansas.
Which is the way these things always happen,
yeah,
right?
It's got to be a better
story.
Way.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so they came across it and looked at the opportunity, look at the product that was currently there, and said, wow, there's a way we can take this patent and utilize it and build a real brand and business around this idea.
And the idea here is what? You save fuel? How does the whole thing work?
Yeah, that's a great question. So actually, the way I describe it, it's very similar to a thermostat in your home. We set it at 70 degrees.
Yeah, it looks like a thermostat, just looking at your website. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So set it at 70, you go to bed. Throughout the night, it turns on and off to keep you comfortable. Well, and over-the-road semi-trucks, these guys, 80% of them sleep in their trucks as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually will turn their diesel engine on, and they will idle their engines all night to provide heat and air condition for the trucks.
And I've always wondered about that. Like, does that really make a lot of sense? And you guys figured out, well, it doesn't really make a lot of sense economically anyway.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So what we have is a product that has some sensors into it, and we will literally start and stop the diesel engine, keeping the driver comfortable at 70 degrees, but reducing anywhere between 50 to 70% on his idle time, which equates to about $3,400 in fuel savings a year.
So are you guys a one-product company at this point?
Yeah, we have one product. We have included two other features that you mentioned earlier. When we got to market, our customers started asking for us to protect their battery voltage. What we found is that these drivers have refrigerators, TVs, and 30% of drivers have sleep apnea. And so they have their machines in their trucks, which drain batteries.
Huh.
And so through some software and a few tweaks, we were able to include a new feature that protects battery voltage And by doing that, we also protect against cold starts during really winter months like we had this winter.
And are you concerned that having one product might not be a great strategy or not?
You know, we talk about that internally. But right now we have a really big market in front of us.
Very, a lot of trucks out there.
A lot of trucks, very fragmented. And we feel if we stay focused and just execute on the vision and the product that we currently have, we can do really well.
Is it taking off? Is it working?
Yeah. Yeah. It's doing really well. You know, we had our turmoil. You know, we had to change where we sold the product, what price we sold the product, what the product was, the four P's. And, you know, about January of this year, things really took off, and we haven't been able to keep our inventory since.
You changed the price point. How? What did you do there?
Well, as people around the table probably know, setting the price is really hard. Our product didn't exist. We had to kind of make a bunch of assumptions of what the price should be, and we entered the market at that. And we were having modest success at a price point, which is currently double than what our current price is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we started getting some larger fleets saying, well, I really love this product, but I'm willing to pay this price for it. And we sat there and said, well, should we listen to the market and change our pricing, or should we still continue to drive at a higher price? And so we decided that it made more sense for us to lower our price and get more volume than it did to keep the high price.
That's interesting. How tricky is pricing, Don? How tricky has pricing been for you with your company?
I still don't have a hardcore rock bottom price because we're still manufacturing at such a small level that, you know, that really does affect your price. Also, I can't sew, so I don't understand garment manufacturing, so I had to learn a lot. And I'm, you know, grateful for all that knowledge now. But these technical garments, to look like everybody else's clothes, require a lot of skill and at least 5 different sewing machines.
Wow.
And so they cost a lot more than you would imagine a shirt to cost.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because the kids that helped me design them wanted normal. They're in abnormal situations. They wanted normal, and normal costs a lot. So I'm sticking with what my market wants, which is what the kids say.
But it's been a struggle to figure out what your price point needs to be?
Well, it's hard to get all your sourcing. What surprised me with the garment manufacturing business is you can't just go out and say who does this and who does that. There's a lot of secretive stuff. People consider it trade secrets, so they won't tell you who their manufacturer is.
Mm-hmm.
You can't find the source of this or that because they won't really tell you. They'll just say it comes in on a truck from a port in San Diego, and you're like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to do a lot of digging. And I've been very blessed because one of my colleagues, who's an entrepreneur scholar, also is in the garment world, and she actually understands it.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been, Jeanette's been giving me a lot of guidance. But it's hard to come up with prices.
You know, Jeff, I'm just wondering about pricing and what a key moment that is for any company when you come to that point trying to get the right number on the product. How critical is that piece of information?
Well, when you hit the marketplace, it is one of the most important things. First of all, you don't want to compete on price. Out in the marketplace. As a startup, you want to differentiate yourself based on quality or be in markets where the space isn't taken up by many competitors. So that would be the first thing. And you want then to get out and talk to your potential customer base.
Mm-hmm.
Find out what their tolerance is in pricing. If you ask them, of course, they'll go to the low end. So you better be good at cost accounting as well. So you better be good at figuring out what your sourcing costs are, what your manufacturing costs are, what your personnel costs are going to be, and what your overheads are going to be.
It's a fairly complicated set of calculations here is what you're laying out.
You have to be very good at cost accounting. You have to be able to break it down and look at every bit of the costs that go into manufacturing or providing that service. And that's a fundamental mistake that a lot of entrepreneurs make, is they don't know how much it's costing them. And so you could sell hundreds and hundreds of units or provide tremendous services. But at the end of the day or at the end of the month or at the end of the year,
you're losing money.
You're losing money. And you can sell lots of units, and if you're losing, and if you're in the red on every unit, you're not going to get there.
You know, Mike Farmer with Leap It, and again the search engine that you've developed. How tricky a proposition is all of this for you, or is it?
So largely, the pricing is set by keyword buying. So there's a very large sort of digital auction that's set up. So in our world of search, sets of keywords have a certain value, and those are bid, and it's all done digitally.
And those are bid by manufacturers of products?
Manufacturers of products. Everybody under the sun bids on these.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about it, it's the way people get fundamentally somebody to their site, and they're willing, if they see somebody searching something that's related to their product offering, then they want to have an ad there. And that's why, interestingly, in the last couple of days, some of the major search engine providers released their earnings. And once again, they surprised on the upside, because mm-hmm. once you know that human intent, the value of the ad goes up significantly, and you have intent when you have search.
You know, I saw a number last night, Mike, and just looking at your business, the size of the market for search, just people who are going online using some sort of tool to search for what they're looking for on the internet. How big is that market potentially?
You know, the interesting thing, the numbers are all over the place,
okay.
because you can define search many different ways. But I think the sort of the standard number, if you look at from a Gartner or some of the analysts who look at the marketplace, I think they frame it up that search is $16 to $20 billion a year marketplace.
So if you can slice off even a piece of that, you're doing okay.
Hopefully. That's the goal anyway.
Yeah. Jeff Hornsby again with the Rainier Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. From working with these people over the years, you know, folks who are interested in starting up a small business, is there a certain type of person, Jeff, who wants to start his own business?
Well, some statistics. About half the folks that start businesses have college degrees. Of course, the other half don't.
Mm-hmm.
Most folks come from middle class backgrounds, which is good, because at least they can draw on some friends and family for startup funding. A lot of folks are married when they start ventures, because that helps. If the spouse is working, they can help cover benefits and health insurance and things like that. Now, whether they stay married or not is another story, and that's a whole other discussion.
That's my next question.
And one last statistic, over 42% of the entrepreneurs were first born in their family, which is another interesting
fact.
Oh,
that's interesting.
But we don't want to pin it down too much on that, because there's a lot of research that is very inconclusive on entrepreneurial traits. Generally, it's kind of a confluence of your experience, your expertise and timing, and also working with the right people, that tends to lead to a venture startup.
That's interesting. Well, let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get our listeners involved. If they want to join our conversation with a question about starting a small business, 816-235-2888 is our number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You can also tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. Let's talk about capital and where you get the money to start a small business. We'll get each of our entrepreneurs to weigh in on that. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to UpToDate on KCUR. This hour, we're talking about small businesses and the challenges of starting one. We're visiting with Jeff Hornsby with the Rainier Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation, Donna Yardrich with Audrey Spirit, Mike Farmer with Leap It, and Ryan Bennett with Idle Smart. Lots of interesting companies here. I'm just curious about the whole notion of capital and where you all got it to do what you're doing. Ryan Bennett with Idle Smart, again, that's the company, the gadget you can buy to help your semi-trailer truck not idle all night. It can turn it off and save some fuel. How did you guys get the capital to do what you're doing?
Yeah, so we were very fortunate, and probably very different than most entrepreneurs. We had our principal had the capital and was looking to buy a business.
Ah.
So he built the team and then went to find the product that we were going to take into the market. So we were very different on the initial capital, but we have all the problems that any other startup would, or not problems, but management of cash flow and making sure that our receivables come in time to pay our expenses.
I imagine the range of possible options of businesses to buy must have been just incredible.
Yeah, I actually wasn't part of the company yet as I honed in, but I knew they were looking at anything from light-up fishing poles to a product that will start and stop a diesel engine. So they were looking at a lot of options and just seeing where an opportunity was that they could make an impact at.
Yeah. Donna, with Audrey Spirit, you got the money to get going. How did you get it?
A couple of things. I work full-time. And I have, like, Capital Ferries. They're unofficial, but when my sister, who manages my business bank account, sees problems, money appears. Like, she'll get some money from my mom or another sister. And so I owe a little bit of money from those things, but basically just bootstrapping.
So you would tell, you would advise someone interested in starting a business, you'd say what to them about the need for access to capital as you move along those first few years?
Money-wise, I behave conservatively normally. So I would say know how to pay your bills first.
Mm-hmm.
Keep your house, keep your food, keep your car, and take care of your kids, and figure out how you can cut back to keep the other things going, to keep your business growing.
Mike, Farmer from Leap It, how about you? How about capital for you guys?
So we went through pretty standard phases. The first was, of course, friends and family. And then we followed up with some angel investors, largely regionally. And then,
how difficult was it to connect with those kinds of people, the angel investors?
You know, the angel investor, not so bad. I mean, in the state of Kansas, they have a 50% angel investor tax credit, which I think really helps to make the process move.
Designed just to help companies like yours,
that's
right?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've raised money from venture capitalists in the Nebraska area, Dundee Venture Capital. And then most recently, we did something that I think it's the first time it's been done. We had brought on a new investor, Brad Feld, who's part of Foundry Group in Boulder, one of the top venture capitalists in the world. And he led on a investment round on a site called AngelList. And AngelList is very interesting because they have hundreds of thousands of angel investors on there. And they also have they have 300,000 startups on there. So he went on and led in a round for us and had a syndicate of 100 investors who followed. So we were able to close on a significant amount of money there. What was cool for Leap, this is something that, you know, 99.9% of the companies that get funded through a site like this are in the Boston Bay Area. We went, and when it went up that our auction or our people could actually invest in us, we had a first close. It was expected to be 2 to 3 weeks. We had a first close within an hour. And then Leap became the number one trending startup out of 300,000 for about 3 weeks. So pretty
wow.
Cool for Kansas City to have a search engine built here and to get that recognition.
Boy, no kidding. Jeff, what's your sense of, give us some overall advice here from the 10,000-foot view about the importance of capital and what you advise startups in terms of how to get it?
Well, you know, that's the toughest question, actually.
Yes, yeah.
In a startup, generally it is bootstrapping and friends and family for a lot of folks. The problem is when you get into technology ventures or bioscience ventures or anything like that, the cost of starting is much more expensive. And when you're dealing with technology or need patents and things like that, you need a higher injection of capital. That's where the angel world has to come in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in the Kansas City area especially, we have a big weakness in the whole area of seed funds and pre-launch and just after launch, where it could be anywhere from just a few $1,000, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, helping to get these ventures to a point where they can launch and maybe go and get other funding.
You hear that, Mike, about Kansas City, Jeff, and not having the kind of money that we need to to get these companies going? Why is that? Why is there an emptiness, a dearth there in this market?
Well, I mean, I hopefully the gap is filling in. You know, the Innovation Center here at UMKC and our institute are working on building a seed fund and coming up with sums of money to help not only student ventures out of UMKC, but community ventures through the that are working through the Innovation Center, Digital Sandbox, and their programs to help them get launched. We also provide not just money, but right next door at the building next door, 4747 Troost, we have incubator space for about 20 ventures, with some of them going very well right now. And those aren't the majority of those are not student ventures at this point. They're community ventures that are graduates of our eScholar program.
Hmm.
And so while money is important, space, advice, we have over 100 mentors that work with our Rainier Institute that are very successful entrepreneurs and business people that provide close oversight and close relationships, as Donna said, with our e-scholars.
And you get the sense, you know, you get the sense, Jeff, that infrastructure, that mentoring infrastructure and in your organization as well, these are things that have come online just the last few years, and they've put Kansas City in a lot better place today than we used to be.
I think so. And the also the Venture Accelerator World, Spark Labs, and the Sprint Accelerator, and our programs and innovation, things are moving into this city because of its innovative culture and its entrepreneurial culture that has been created since entrepreneurship is one of the top initiatives in the city. Hopefully this will come in. Venture capital folks don't generally get into early seed funding types of situations. They wait and they look at ventures mostly after launch.
Yeah.
What we have to do is backfill the seed funding from the beginning and provide that kind of funding, especially for student entrepreneurs, which that we work a lot with. They don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're 22, 23 years old, sometimes even younger than that, and they have some very good ideas. And so the key for us is one, to provide some seed money, some space for them to work on their ventures, some very sharp mentoring, as well as some guidance on how to get that business going before a lot of money is actually wasted in terms of that process.
And this eScholar program you have some openings right now.
Yes, we do. We have a new program starting August 23rd, and we have some slots available. If they want to go to our Rainier Institute website at UMKC or email me at hornsbyj@umkc.edu, I'd be glad to get them information. And we do have some scholarships still remaining for both student and community participants.
Donna, hop in here.
Yes, I need to amend my statement about bootstrapping because that was inaccurate. If iBootstrap Plus had the benefits of the eScholar program, I do have incubator space. Audrey Spirit has an office at UMKC's incubator at 4747 Troost. I've filed two patent applications with the help of a mentor who's at a major intellectual property firm here in Kansas City associated with the eScholar program. And then Audrey Spirit did win first place at the Venture Creation Challenge in 2013, and I had a $5,000 prize.
Wow.
Plus $500 for that. So, you know, with the access to the mentors that continues today even beyond my graduation.
Right.
That's all capital that went into the business.
And this year we gave away $55,000 with the Venture Creation Challenge, and the top four firms that won are using that to help proceed with their business.
Let me go to some phone calls here. 816-235-2888. Wesley from Lee Summit. Wesley, good morning.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having this program. Very, very good topic. I have several ideas. I actually took one of my ideas to a local manufacturer. It has to do with the home decorating field. And when we sat down after I left, I was very intimidated by the process. He said the cheapest route would be to go through China to manufacture my product. But I want to produce the product here in the United States. I actually have a follow-up question, if you could comment on this first part.
Donna, let me go to you with this, this notion of where to produce clothing apparel. It sounds like, Wesley, what about that?
You can do it here in the United States. I have a wonderful manufacturer in the Southwest, and I'm going to have another one because everybody says you have to have a backup manufacturer in case there's a natural disaster or any kind of problem. So you can do it here in the U.S.
Wesley, go ahead.
My other question is, I actually know how to design it and everything, but I would need some more specialty manufacturer help in that area. I don't know really how to mass produce it. I know how to make it initially. I just don't know how to mass produce it.
He'd be a good candidate for the eScholar program. Actually.
Excellent. Yes.
I hope you'll do that, Wesley.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888, or send us a tweet at KCUR up to date. You know, Mike, let me come to you. What do you think most people do wrong when they decide to start their own business? What's your sense?
You know, there's a lot that's been written around this area.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Jeff touched on it. It's the sort of, they call it nail it and then you scale it. And
meaning
a lot
what?
Of people scale, they try to scale their business before they've really hit what the value proposition is for the customer.
Explain that to me in layman's terms.
So basically, let's say you're building your product and you believe now is the go time. A lot of times you bring in a little bit of money, there's some energy, and all of a sudden people start hiring way too fast. I mean, you've got to stay as lean as possible and push out your time horizon as long as possible.
Coming out of the gate.
Yeah.
You gotta get out of your house or your office and test your value proposition, test your concept with your potential audience.
And how do you have to do
that over and over again.
How do you do that?
You go out and you write down what your concept is and talk to people about it. Mm-hmm. Generally, they recommend there's the Lean Startup manual. Steve Blank and others talk about going out and start and talking to at least 20 people at every iteration of testing your concept. So go out and talk to 20 people and take what you learned, go back, revise your value proposition, revise your product or your concept, and then go back and talk to 20 more people that are in your potential audience base. And by doing that, you learn over and over again, and you can pivot, you can change, and you can redefine, and then you can start looking at launching.
You know, Ryan Bennett with Idle Smart, how did you guys do that with the trucking industry? To what extent did you take the product out over and over and over again to make sure it was something that, in fact, truckers would be interested in?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we love the Lean Startup. We love that methodology, and it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that there was a market that was willing to purchase our product due because the first inventor and patent guy sold a few hundred out of his shop. What we didn't know was how we sell it, where we sell it, at what price we sell it, and how do we advertise and attract the actual fleets. What is our sales cycle? How long do we need to purchase inventory? So all those things that come to operating the business is things that we had to step through and say, let's test some assumptions that we have and prove that we are correct or incorrect. Turns out that price, promotion, the place we sold it and how we sold it was all incorrect when we went to market. So we kept our overhead down, and we iterated our product to add the battery voltage feature. We changed our price due to what the customer was saying because we were outside the door trying to make sales at our current price point. We learned that we were too high, lowered it, and got a sale out of it.
So you're saying that where you initially marketed your product, you went to the wrong place.
Yes.
Where did you go, and where should you have been? Just give us a general sense.
Yeah, very quickly, we went to a lot of different trade shows that weren't relevant to us, and we also did print advertising. Now we go to very specific trade shows, mostly at the state level instead of national level, and we also do a lot of online advertising, which I was surprised to know that works, but it does.
It worked pretty well.
Yes, it does.
Okay. Let's go back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Joe from Kansas City, Missouri. Joe, you're on Up to Date. We're talking with entrepreneurs today about starting small businesses. Good morning, Joe.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering if they could comment, or you could comment, on where entrepreneurs can hook up with like subject matter experts in their field. For example, if they want to start some kind of, startup, where would they connect with experts in that field?
Jeff, you're on.
There's a lot of places. In Kansas City, we're fortunate to have a lot of venture accelerators. Some of them, though, look for high-tech ventures or health ventures, in the case of the Sprint Accelerator. At UMKC, we have many offerings. Through the Rainier Institute, we offer the eScholar program, as I talked about before, with over 100 mentors available through that program as you progress. And in that mix, there's lawyers, there is subject matter experts in many different industry fields that are there to help you. That's what they do, and they work with you very closely. They challenge you. They give you hurdles to get through over a nine-month period. But then other sources in the Innovation Center, which is right here on Troost, 4747 Troost, especially for technology ventures, the Digital Sandbox, and the Small Business Technology Center here too, the SBTDC. They also work with venture startups.
So, Jeff, let's just dumb this down for a second. I'm someone out there listening to this. I've got some cockamamie idea. I'm wondering if there's a market for it, and they want to find out more. They should call where?
They should first call would probably be the SBDC in their area, Small Business Development Center, or here at UMKC, the Small Business Technology Development Center. And they can give them some guidance. We also have a SCORE program. These are retired business folks that work with startups. That's housed at Troost as well. That's a good place to start. So those are good referral places. We welcome people to give us a call too. Our goal is to then aim them either into one of our eScholar program, which is a community based, or one of our academic programs.
Yeah, Ryan, hop in here.
Yeah, and also all those programs are excellent to go to as well. There is a thing called Startup Digest, KNC Startup Digest, that has a curated events for entrepreneurs in the area to go to completely free. Meetup.com has probably 40-plus meetups that you can go to, and also LinkedIn's great as well to utilize.
Definitely.
Yeah, Mike? Yeah, I think Joe's touching on another important question, and that is when you're doing these type of things, you consistently need external validation. And here we are as Leap.it in the middle of America taking on some of the largest companies, hottest companies on the planet.
And lots of folks are thinking you're nuts, probably.
Right.
Yeah.
So for us, it all comes down to, he referred to as a subject matter expert. And if somebody's interested in, for example, Leap.it and investing, I'm going to do my pitch and all that. But who are the people that person can talk to that have a lot of background, a lot of experience. In fact, very recently we brought on a new investor who's from San Diego who fundamentally was behind the invention of sponsored search. And we had hoped he would come on as an advisor, but he actually came on as an investor.
Even better.
Yeah. Here's a guy who fundamentally sold his company to Yahoo for $1 billion, quite a few, one of the fathers of sponsored search. Mm. So that external validation is key in this. So you got to, Joe, you got to seek those people out for your industry who can actually validate what you're doing.
What was it like for you, Mike, when you actually started hiring employees and you have people dependent on you for a living? Yeah. What kind of feeling, what kind of leap was that for you?
It was a significant leap. I have to say, within our environment, we're very transparent. I mean, the reality of being a part of a startup is, you're very lean, and you're based on your cash burn. You can be 45 days, 30 days cash, and you still got to bring in new money. And I've just learned that
that's pressure, isn't it?
It's a lot of pressure. But when everybody knows what we're dealing with, being open, I think it works. And people want to, it's been great. I have an incredible technical team to do what we do. And they are, bought in, and we're all in this together, and we're, it's much better when you're transparent and open with everybody.
How do you personally handle that kind of pressure?
A
lot of jogging, or what do you do?
Actually, it's funny you mentioned that. You do have to exercise. Mm-hmm. You do have to unplug. You do have to, seek out, departures every once in a while. Mm-hmm. I've actually got a unique situation where I, a lot of times will wake up and work from 2 to 4 in the morning and then go back to sleep so that I can get that extra time and it doesn't take away from anybody. Actually, it's a pretty inspiring time as well.
That's interesting. 2 to 4 in the morning?
Yeah. That's
better you than me, brother.
Well, yeah. It's a function of having back-end programmers who stay up all night. But yeah. It's interestingly, this notion of needing to sleep all the way straight through for 8 hours.
That's an old concept.
That's an
right?
old concept.
Who needs it?
Yeah. Exactly.
Ryan Bennett, how about you? This notion of hiring people and the pressure that puts on folks like yourself.
Well, it's a little different for me to answer because I am not one of the owners of the company.
Okay.
So I probably should just pass that question.
Yeah. Donna, have you actually hired people or is it all family?
Not yet. But I just think the thing is that you have to, no matter what you're doing, is do the right thing for the right reason and treat everybody well. So especially when things aren't going well, you have a motivated staff.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could, I want to say happy birthday to my son, Peter.
Yeah, okay. What about the pressures of hiring people and what that does to the owners of companies, Jeff, as you look at all this?
A close friend of mine and a well-known author in the entrepreneurship education world, Don Caracco, says his father told him, you can't teach entrepreneurship unless you can teach them that their spine sweats at night when they have to make payroll the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very true. The stress of it the effect on your health, there's a lot of good research on successful entrepreneurs tend to be healthy entrepreneurs as well, and or else it really takes a toll on them and on their business. So that's something you have to work on. And one recommendation I always in a lot of the consulting I've done with startups and with entrepreneurs and scaling companies is that manage your company, one, based on your customers, so from the outside in, and then manage your people in such a way that you always look at your overhead and develop compensation systems and other things that minimize fixed overhead and make it variable based on commissions, sales, company performance, and other things. So you only pay when you have the ability to pay. But you do have those month-to-month expenses, whether it's payroll or other overhead, and that goes back to the cost accounting and knowing your finances. And don't delegate your financial management to anybody else. Become an expert yourself.
Donna Yadrich, tell us about your darkest moment at Audrey Spirit and how you fought through it. What was your toughest moment?
Well, I don't know that this was – this was probably one of the most challenging things. It was – trying to ship the stuff to have my first production run,
mm-hmm.
because trying to find boxes big and strong enough, it was like a Keystone Cops. It was hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
And it took way longer than I thought. It was like a 3-day process.
Wow.
So, you know, like, for example, to make a red shirt, you need 5 industrial size spools of red thread, because mm-hmm. it's a 5-thread, 5-spool machine. And who knows that stuff? It's mm-hmm. just, it's crazy.
Mike, how about your darkest moment?
You know, great question. It was very specifically about a year and a half ago. I had the core team, we had been working on the product for many, many hours of coding. And I was struggling on the fundraising front and had an all hands meeting one night, and I went to the team and, you know, basically told them, I said, guys, you know, this is it. This is the end of the line. And, you know, it's a moment I'll never forget. They all, you know, I kind of was on one side of the room, and, you know, the core team, we had spent so many hours and I just had been beat up pretty hard on the fundraising front. And they came back and they all looked at me and they said, we want to keep building and we want to do it. You know, at that point it was to do it fundamentally for stock. So they were just buying on. And we, you know, we had a strong vision at that time. And interestingly, it was a week later that I went up and made some connections with some capital. Pretty cool.
And the corner got turned, eh?
The corner got turned.
We're going to leave our conversation there. Donna Yadrich with Audrey Spirit, Mike Farmer with Leap It, Ryan Bennett with Idle Smart, and Jeff Hornsby with the Rainier Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. You guys have been great. Thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you.